Waypoints is sponsored by Yellow Dog Fly Fishing. After 24 years in business, Yellow Dog is excited to announce that we've expanded our travel and booking business to now include a full lineup of equipment, fly, and tackle solutions for the world of fishing. We made the decision to expand into retail to ensure that our traveling clients have exactly the right flies, gear, and apparel for every destination we offer, be it a fishery close to home or an exotic destination on the other side of the planet. We all know that having the right gear specific to your destination is crucial. Yellow Dog can now pair the most relevant travel and worldwide fishing information with the perfect fly and equipment options for our entire lineup of destinations. Visit the new Yellow Dog website at yellowdogflyfishing.com and let's make your next adventure great.
Like a backstage pass to the world of fly fishing travel, this is Waypoints, the podcast of destination angling. News and events, helpful travel tips, destination profiles, great stories, and expert advice from some of the most seasoned and experienced names in fishing travel. Waypoints is brought to you by Yellow Dog Fly Fishing Adventures, the industry's number one specialty travel company for the very best insider knowledge, logistical support, and trip preparation. Freshwater or saltwater, international or domestic, Yellow Dog has you covered for your next fishing adventure. And now, your Waypoints host, Yellow Dog founder and director, Jim Klug.
Greenland is the world's largest island, almost 850,000 square miles in size, with more than 80% of the land covered in ice. Only along the coast do you find ice-free Arctic tundra and a number of pristine and productive rivers. The population of Greenland is only 57,000 people, which means the country has the lowest population density in the world. For centuries, Greenland was part of the Kingdom of Denmark until 1979, when the country was granted home rule and the opportunity to establish their own political system. Even today, however, the two countries of Greenland and Denmark are extremely close and very much linked when it comes to trade, supplies, culture, and travel. I recently had the chance to travel to Greenland at the invitation of Thomas Sobierk, the owner and founder of Flyfish Greenland. This episode of Waypoints is actually being recorded on location in Greenland during our 10-day visit to two of Thomas's operations, Camp North and Erfolic Lodge. Thomas, welcome to the program. Thanks for sitting down to talk about the fishing opportunities here in Greenland and all that your programs have to offer. It's super cool recording this episode as we sit here on the banks of the Erfolic River. It's hard to believe we're out here in this remote and pristine area of Greenland.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jim. It is indeed, and especially since it all came together so fast and, you know, suddenly we could do it and we've had a great week and now we're here. It's an honor to be on your show, so thanks.
Well, I just have been kind of pinching myself for the last 10 days being here in Greenland. I've had the great fortune to travel to a lot of places around the world. This is so unique. I was thinking about how I would describe it when I got home and what I would compare it to. I mean, it's a little bit like, you know, Iceland, maybe some parts of Bristol Bay, but it's a one of a kind destination for the setting, the landscape, certainly the fishing. We're going to talk all about that. But before we do, I want to start by hearing a little bit about you, Thomas, your background. Tell us about yourself and how you found your way to the fly fishing industry.
Yeah, it all started. I came from advertising, but was always around fishing, and I did articles and photographs and so on back in the day. And then I decided to start a fishing magazine, you know, conventional and fly. It was pretty small market in Scandinavia. And that caught on, so I published magazines in Denmark and Sweden. But along the way, for some reason, it was quite a coincidence, we started to do reader's trips. There wasn't much of a travel industry for fishing back then. And these reader's trips caught on, so it's like, okay, let's, you know, find a new location and a new one. And yeah, it eventually grew into the travel business, and I left the magazine business. But anyway, during those times, we really wanted to get to Greenland. We knew of Greenland, I mean, the strong connection with Denmark. We knew there was lots of chars up here, but most of the rivers were either, you know, the pictures that we've seen were glacial rivers, totally milky, or small fish, or very short rivers. And this was before you could just Google anything or, you know, find it on satellite photos or images, whatever. So finally, a guy came to the came to the magazine and wanted to do an article on a river up here, and the article was really no good. The images weren't great, but it really caught our attention because he was clearly fishing a bigger Clearwater River with big fish, and that's exactly what we were looking for. And this was back, I think, in 2005. So a little bit like now, we got a trip together really fast because the season is short, and I couldn't go. I had small kids at the time. I couldn't go on, you know, 3 weeks' notice. So I sent two friends up just to have a look, and they came back, and I mean, it was just incredible, right? I saw the pictures and whatever they caught and big fish, and I was like, okay, we got to do something there. So
you've got something here.
Yeah,
you were thinking.
Yeah. And that's also when I met my partners up here, Bowen and Ed, and we've been working together ever since, you know, establishing this together. So so that's how it all came along.
Well, it's unusual. It's not the easiest place to do business and get things set up, but you saw some opportunities up here. You thought, hey, we can open this up to the world, and you knew there was something unique about these fisheries. But prior to that, there really wasn't anything that was known on an international level about Greenland.
Not at all. And also, when we started, we couldn't even market it internationally. First of all, I mean, we wouldn't know how to reach the market. We were Scandinavian-based, but also we started out really simple. I mean, small tents and, you know, all the guests cooking together, doing the dishes, even splitting the bill from the supermarket, whatever. So very low-key. And also, there was no... I mean, anybody that bought a fishing license could fish these rivers. There was no concessions or anything as we have now. So right from the start, I also realized if this has to be really built into a bigger sustainable program attracting international anglers, we need these concessions. Otherwise, everybody could go on the same river and really ruin it for everybody.
Yeah, they're going to see your great pictures and be like, hey, we're going to go there and do it ourselves.
Yeah, and one thing is, you know, we might decide this river is fine for 10 or 12 anglers, but another operator might think the same and, you know, during the same week put 10, 12 anglers out there and it'll be all screwed, right? So I started working with the authorities. I found a guy that thought concessions would be a good idea. There was also some resistance to it from other locals and so on. But anyway, from I think they asked me to do a write-up of how I think it should be done. This was back in 2008. I recently found this old PDF that I sent to them. And the concessions came through, I think in 2016 it was finally voted through, and it started January 2017. And when you look on the, or when you read the law on concessions now, it's pretty cool because actually maybe 60, 70% of it is pretty much based on that original write-up that I did to them, right? And then they added other good stuff as well. But so, I mean, eventually we got it our way, but it took a long time. And that is where we got to the point where we saw, okay, now we can do this more, you know, internationally. And for Bowen and Ed, it was also the chance to even decide to build a lodge out here. It's a big investment, right? You cannot do it without concessions. So now we have concessions on three rivers and a fourth coming up. But it was a long way getting here. I mean, it was 15 years or more.
Well, it's pretty cool to think about the document that you pitched in the very beginning is now kind of written into the law up here. But I guess when you have a country... The entire country is 57,000 people. That's the full population of Greenland.
Yeah, it's nothing.
It's kind of mind-blowing. It's like, you know, that's the size of Bozeman, Montana.
Yeah.
And that's the whole country up here. But, it's a pretty fascinating way that things get done in Greenland. Well, you were just mentioning the different operations. Fast forward to today. You guys now have three different operations, fishing operations and locations here in Greenland. Soon to be a fourth location that I know you're working on. You guys are pretty much the entire fly fishing game here in Greenland these days.
We really are, because the thing is, even there, if there's even there's a lot of rivers with char running them, most of them are small or glacial or, you know, just not interesting for sport fishing. There aren't that many big rivers. So we're now fortunate enough basically to have the four big rivers on the coast here that we know of and that you can reach. There might be some great rivers up north, but there's no infrastructure. I mean, you can't reach them, right? It still has to be within a boat ride or helicopter.
And you got to supply the operations.
Exactly. And in the early days, of course, we would also scout quite a few rivers just to be sure we weren't missing anything, right? So I remember, you know, being put off on a river for a couple of days and right away, kind of the next day, just call on the sat phone and say, hey, whenever you can, pick us up. I mean, there's a waterfall, like, you know, just in there. The fish can't pass it. It's too short. And
this one's not going to work.
Yeah, we dumped off some young guys that were really adventurous. We dumped them up in one location and picked them up 2 weeks later in another, and they were able to fish three or four rivers on the way down. And sure, they caught fish, but just found no rivers that were big enough where you could fish for a week and still, you know, it's still interesting. That's kind of key, right?
Well, give us a quick rundown and description of your different locations and your different offerings here.
Yeah, so right now we're at the Efalik River where it all started. Obviously here you have nice comfort. You have a lodge.
It's a gorgeous lodge.
You can have a hot shower. You know, we can do great meals, sleep in a real bed and so on. So that's maybe for some our top destination, but not for all, because we also have Camp North, which is a tent camp. We're continuously trying to improve it to make it more comfortable. Again, hot showers for big tents for everybody, wooden platforms and so on. So it's a nice tent camp, but it's still a tent camp. But Camp North, the river there is called Ikaluksasuit. I probably can't even pronounce it, but you know.
I'm not even going to try.
No,
don't. We'll just call it Camp North.
Exactly. That's what we figured right from the start. You know, if anybody's going to talk about this, we have to find a different name because it's.
Ikaluksasuit?
Ikaluksasuit, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, this river, it that valley there, it's a really big, really big area. So you can hike up on the tributary. We have a boat to reach the upper river. But just to get really to the fishing beach where it starts, you even have to hike quite a bit. Because for some reason, even if the camp is on the river, the fish don't stop there. They pass through, right? So every day starts with a fair amount of hiking. It's easy hiking, but it's still a long hike. So for some, that's kind of too much. For others, just so adventurous. And also the fish there are actually the biggest that we know in Greenland. I mean, we caught some really big fish up to 19 pounds, which is huge for Greenland. We don't get them every week. We don't get them every year, but they're there. And probably for the reason that this river runs into a huge fjord, and these chars probably feed more on fish, so they grow really, really big and heavily built. And also, they don't have to climb anything. There's no waterfall until the very end. So that also decides the shape of the fish. Anyway, that's the second operation. And the third one is just down south of here called Napirisat.
Napirisat, that's the third operation.
Yeah, and it's not quite as long, so probably still 5-6 kilometers of fishing. There are no lakes on that one. Well, there are far up in the system, but we don't really reach them. So a little bit easier hiking, but we do smaller groups there and mainly, you know, exclusive groups when 7-8 friends want to go together. So that's the third one.
And that's a camp operation as well.
Identical to Camp North. So mm-hmm. same big steel frame, dining tent, same tents on wooden platforms. So yeah, so same thing.
Yeah. So that's the third.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, we were lucky enough to fish two this week, and we're just kind of at the tail end of the trip here, but we started at Camp North and it was incredible. It is camping. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you're in a geodesic dome tent on a wooden platform. Everyone has their own tent, which is very nice. There's a dining tent and kind of the social gathering area. But what I loved about it is, I mean, you are hiking. You get up in the morning, you eat a big breakfast, you put on your waders, grab your day pack and your rod, and you head upstream. And you can walk for miles up there if you want. It's easy walking, as you said, but the river is just spectacularly gorgeous. It looks like kind of a giant Upper Madison River type fishery that you might find in a place like Montana. But you head all the way up, there's a series of different lakes, there's a tributary stream that comes in, and some absolutely massive fish, no doubt about it. We loved it there. Then we made the transfer south. We came here to Erfalik Lodge, and after camping at Camp North, I was like, okay, this is very comfortable, this is nice. We got here to Erfalik Lodge, and I'm just blown away by this place. I mean, you sit here overlooking just this incredible kind of coastline of Greenland. The river flows right below the lodge. There's a hot tub and a sauna down here. It's one of the most comfortable lodges and built in just an incredibly and logistically difficult area. How Bo and Annetta, your partners, were able to construct this lodge out here, it's just mind-blowing to me. But what a great place to spend a week. I mean, the food, the scenery, the comfort. And we got done a couple of days ago from a big hike. You know, it was cold.
or kind of late in the season. Fishing had been great. We get down, and first thing you do is take off the waders and jump in the hot tub, and it's pretty deluxe.
Yeah, it's very far from where we came from. To me, it's sometimes almost ironic to sit here and look down to the staff quarters where it all started by a very small cabin. You know,
that was the original.
That was the original. That was all that was here, and we would stay in small, you know, expedition tents around it, and so I still have to pinch myself sometimes that Bowen and Edda were able to come up with this. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
It's gorgeous. It's hard to describe, but we certainly have tons of photos on the Yellow Dog website. It's worth checking out because this place is one of a kind. There's no doubt about it. Well, the name of the game at all of these operations, and I want to talk a little bit about this. It is river fishing for sea run char, and some exceptionally large sea run char, I would add on that. It's both numbers and size. Now, some listeners who've maybe caught char in, say, Alaska might see char as kind of a bycatch species, you know, a fish that maybe you hook when you're fishing for big rainbows in Bristol Bay or elsewhere in Alaska. But here, they're the target species. And I think maybe a lot of listeners, a lot of American anglers like, you know, char fishing, would I go that far to fish for char? And I'll fully admit in the very beginning when you and I started talking, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, I get it, you know, maybe. But I have had a complete change of heart after 10 days up here on how cool these fish are. Tell us a little bit about the char species up here and what, in your opinion, makes these fish so exciting. Why would someone fly all the way over here to chase these fish?
That's a big question to answer. But maybe it's not only about the fish itself. I've been traveling a lot as well over the years, and very often to target a specific species, or want to catch a tarpon or Atlantic salmon or whatever, you go there for that particular fish, and everything else is a great bonus. For me, Greenland is a little the other way around, though it is. Those are great fish. We'll get to that in a minute. But here is just the total experience. It's not really that important if it's a char or a rainbow or a salmon or whatever. Just being out here, right? These big open spaces, crisp air, weather changing all the time, wildlife. So, but the fish are spectacular. I mean, there are only two freshwater species in these rivers, the Arctic char and a little stickleback. That's it. That's the two only freshwater species in Greenland. And these fish, they stay in the lakes until they're 5-6 years old. Then they kind of decide whether they'll continue with that or they'll go big and go Z-run, right? Okay, let's get out to the ocean. So they're already 5-6 years old when they make it out there. And that's when they start putting on growth, obviously. By then, they're only, you're in inches. So 40 centimeters will be, I don't know, 15 inches or what, maybe even less, 12. Yeah. That's when they make it out to the ocean. And they go out there every year, feed for a few hectic months or three, go out in spring, come back in early summer and stay up here until they spawn over winter in the lakes and do it all over again. So the fish itself is just fantastic to fish for, in my opinion, because we can catch them swinging streamers. In recent season, we've started to do a lot of nymphing as well. But the overall, the greatest is just when you can get them on the surface. We call them foam flies for some reason, but to you it'll be gurglers, right? You call
them it's a skated foam fly, big hook, and there might not be anything that's as cool as far as just being visual and explosive and exciting.
And I don't know why these chars react to that, but we found out, I think it was a coincidence, I think my good friend Jacob, when he was up there on this exploration trip, I think he had been to Alaska with us just before, and he had one of these mouse flies. So, you know, there were so many fish, so he put it on, and he got him to grab it. And then it soon developed into, we found that, okay, orange and red and pink foam flies was just the thing. They went crazy for him.
They go berserk.
Yeah, and especially in the early days. There's still a lot of fish, and they're still fairly easy to catch sometimes, but not always. But they were maybe even easier in the beginning as any new fishery. So what was the point, you know, in catching one after the other on streamers? You would probably catch a little less, but you could still catch sometimes 20 fish a day skating foam flies. And you know, they come, you see wakes coming from afar. They sometimes they kind of just kiss the fly a little. Sometimes they just hammer it. It's crazy. And we talked about it yesterday. You cannot scape foam flies and not make any sounds, right? Yeah. It's like, ooh, ah, ooh. All the,
You're hooting and hollering.
Totally.
We had three of us lined up yesterday on the bank, and at several times we're all skating flies. At several points, all three of us are hooked up. Everybody's making noise and hooting and hollering. It's some of the most exciting fishing. It's super visual, this surface action. You can go to Alaska. You can go to some places in the U.S. West, some places in Canada. You can skate flies. And people who obviously, skate flies to steelhead and other anadromous species know how amazing it is when you get these eats. But they're just coming one after another yesterday. And it was probably one of the most enjoyable days of fishing I've ever had in my life. It was something.
Yeah, when they're on. I mean, and they're not always. You know, sometimes you just try skating and nothing's really happening. You go back to streamers or nymphing or whatever. But when they're on, fish nothing else, right?
Oh, it's so fun.
But anyway, getting back to the species or to the char itself up here, I also think what makes it so fascinating is we have the fresh ones, so totally chrome fish, and they fight like hell. I mean, they don't even have to be big. 4 or 5 pounds, if you get the odd crazy one, it'll take you into your backing. Not always, I mean, but they're strong.
Super strong
fish. For their size, they're really strong. We also get them, as you know, a lot bigger. But then as we progress into the season, they start to color up, especially here on Erfalik. We're not quite sure why they color up so much more, maybe something to do with the food. But, I mean, they get so red late in the season. So then you start catching some of those, still with fresh ones thrown in. But you have it all here, right?
And these giant pumpkins. I mean, they're like, they're strawberry red and pumpkin orange, just these neon colors that – I'm looking through some of the photos I've shot this week, and I'm like, if I saw this, and this is like right off the card out of the camera, it's like, wow, whoever, post-edited that put in way too much saturation.
Yeah.
It's not the case. They are just that bright. They're some of the prettiest fish I think I've ever seen.
So really, I mean, why wouldn't you love these fish, right? And I remember when we started, we also knew that, it wasn't a highly sought-after species, at least not in the U.S. And I remember having ideas, should we market it as ice trout or something stupid, just to get away from its char? But we're like, why? It's such a – I mean, if you think this fish isn't great, it's fish racism, right? It's fantastic.
No, it is. It's a special fishery, and it's a super cool species. As you said, aggressive, strong – and absolutely beautiful, especially when you get them colored up and the bigger fish sizes. But, the fishery here, I think it's important to mention that it's all wade fishing, which is super cool. There are, when there's some lakes involved, you've got some transfer boats that take you from one side of the lake to the other, and then you continue to hike up. It's all walk wade fishing. The rivers are very conducive to being able to cross and get into skinny water. You can fish pretty much 100% of the water by foot.
Yeah, and very often, I mean, you're not even in the water; you're just casting off the bank, right? But and if it's wading, it's shallow wading. But it also involves, as we talked about, all the hiking. These rivers, I mean, you're not allowed to use any transportation up here. You cannot use an ATV. They want to keep the environment, the whole scenery pristine. ATV, you'll have tracks all over. You can't use a jet boat; they're too shallow. And we're kind of fine with that by now. That's kind of just the price of it. Admission here, you've got to hike to get to the fish. But that also means when you have a group of guests here, some hike far further than others, and they all get spread out, and they're not all in the same place. You can do what you want to do. If you like the tributary on Camp North, fine, go back and do another day up there. If it's too far, stay on the main river. That's the way it is. But it's all hiking, it's all wading.
We did a lot of hiking this week. We had some days where we did 5 or 6 miles round trip. We had other days. I think we had one where we did 13 or 14 miles up and back. It's great. I will say, you want to be able to walk. You need to be mobile. You should be in fairly good shape if you're going to come here. If you're someone who does not like to hike or you have trouble going any kind of distances, it might not be the fishery for you because you do have to be fairly mobile.
Yeah, I would say it isn't the fishery. Sure, in early season, especially here on Erfalik, we have a tidal home pool. You can get fish there. It's not very far to the lake that will cross by boat, and there's lots of fish just on the other side between Lake 1 and 2, as we call the outlet there. But is that really where you want to fish for an entire week? We have some that do it, and they're fine with that. But, I think you should be prepared to hike also, meaning, have good breathable waders, have good hiking shoes or wading boots that fit you because you're going to use them.
Oh, yeah.
That's what takes you to the fish, you know, your own two legs. That's it.
Well, and you know, every time you would feel like, okay, boy, I think I've gone far enough. You're like, all right, I'll go around one more bend.
Exactly.
And then it opens up into this whole different scene and these majestic landscapes that, you know, I mean, they kind of take your breath away a little bit. It's not just the hiking that can take your breath away, but, I mean, you're just stunned by the landscapes that you see, and every corner brings something new.
Yeah, and also, as you saw, you know, when we're hiking up there, the river will change its characteristics, right? So you might have, you know, slow-flowing, wide river, and then suddenly it's a faster river with pockets, and then, you know, changes back again. So it's not a competition of hiking, but the more you can hike, the more you will see. Do it at your own pace, and definitely, you know, you'll catch plenty of fish here. We'll get to that. But you don't have to fish hard and hike hard every day.
Yeah,
take a rest day or fish close to camp, and then, you know, okay, we'll do a big day tomorrow. That people do that a lot.
And it's important to note, speaking of kind of developing your own schedule, this is not really a guided lodge type experience. I mean, this is not do it yourself because the whole infrastructure is provided, but it's kind of a fish-it-yourself type of deal. It's very easy water to figure out, very easy to read. Heck, most of the time, you can look down and see where the fish are. It's very evident when they're stacked in there. You can find big fish very easily just by, you know, scanning the water. But most of the time, you're going out each day and you're kind of fishing on your own.
You are. So there's still, of course, some technique to catching them and you know, the good flies or how to fish a lie or whatever. But we found that since we came, you know, from Scandinavia, and it was also about keeping an affordable price and all that, it was never guided. But now we're at the point where we have a camp manager and he has an assistant and they know the river really well, and they'll be happy to introduce everyone and help on the river as well. But most of our guests, after a day or two, they're fine. They just fish on their own. I mean, if you need help, it's here, but it's not a guide for every two anglers. We just found there's no need.
Yeah.
And it will be a completely different product, completely different price. And it's like, why? So, you know, some people are here to help. They'll be happy to do it, but that's it. And you'll have to, you know, tie your own knots or handle the fish or whatever. But that's the clients we have here and that we want. And it's a good product for them.
It's a great product. And I would emphasize that it's a pretty easy fishery and species and situation to figure out. Once you're here for a day or two, you get dialed in pretty quickly.
Yeah. And even if you're not that experienced, of course, I mean, great fishing skills will be rewarded like everywhere, but is it really so important if you're catching 7 in a day or 20 or, you know, that also has to a lot of how you decide to fish them, right? But everybody will catch fish.
Oh, yeah.
We'll make sure of that. I mean,
yeah, they're here. There's plenty of them here.
Yeah, and if you need help, fine, we'll help you and you'll get the fish.
Well, let's talk for a minute about the fishing season here in Greenland. When do you guys operate? What's the best time to come? I'll say it's a fairly short season. So tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a short 8 weeks. We've decided. I mean, we are now shutting down the season. We're just here at the end of it. And as you can see, we had great fishing the last 2 days. We could continue. But then again, the weather's getting a little more rough. We also want to give the fish a break. I mean, they're starting to get into spawning mode and so on. So you got to stop at some time.
Yeah.
So we they don't enter the river until probably here, if it's an early spring, maybe even mid-June, if it's a late spring, late June. So we decide to start, more or less July 1st, depends on the flight dates and so, and run throughout August. So 2 months. Yeah. We found that works for us. And that also assures that it's not like there are prime weeks and shoulder weeks. And no, they're all good weeks.
You've got 8 weeks that you operate and they all fish well.
Yeah. And what we'll decide, sure, I mean, in the season, when you look back, 1 week was maybe even more spectacular than another. But that's the weather on the week that decides that. Or if there's some rain just at the same time as a high tide, there might be a big push of fish that stirs up everything. You know, the fish that are already here gets aggressive. The fishing goes crazy. A slower week might be if we have blue skies and, you know, high sun every day. But then we can fish during the evening or, you know, we'll always catch them. But even a slow week is still a great week because you'll still catch a good number.
The numbers are still pretty shocking.
They are. Yeah. We don't have any poor weeks really. And I mean, there are people that want to come, you know, plan well ahead and say, okay, what's the best week you got? I can even wait until next year or 2 years out. I can't tell you in advance. So I usually tell people either to go whenever it fits their calendar, or of course, if they have a specific wish to catch, you know, big bright fish right at the opening of the season, fine, come then. If they want to go for these super red ones, yeah, look at, you know, the last 2-3 weeks of the season maybe, or just go in the middle. I mean, but
no wrong answer.
Not really, you know. Yeah. And I see when we, you know, when people have been here, they all leave happy every week, right? Bo tells me, and his captains, you know, when they're picking them up, it's always with a smile on their face. There are no bad weeks here.
No, that's certainly been my experience, no doubt about it. Well, one of the neat things up here, too, is that during the summer season, and first off, let me say, I love the fact that you're fishing for this char. They're all in the river. They're getting stacked up. They're coming in big numbers, but they're not spawning yet. And so when they move into spawning mode, you guys are already done.
Yeah,
and then the fish are left to do their thing.
Yeah, we got to be fair at some point, you know, leave them to
give them a break.
Yeah, exactly.
Let them do their fish business.
They have the pleasure of seeing us every day for 8 weeks, so... I think they're looking forward to have a little quiet time as well to do their thing.
Well, and we're here the very last week of the season. The at Erfolak, the lodge is now shutting down for a very long off season. But it's, you know, you feel like it's the end of the season. We've had snow, you know, rimming the mountaintops every night. This morning there was a heavy amount of frost everywhere. So it's getting cold. And you can see Greenland gets some proper winter. There's no doubt about it.
And again, I mean, maybe even from a fishing perspective, we could push it another week or two, but then you start running into the rougher weather, right? Yeah. So, we've decided that's the season, you know.
Yeah. Well, one of the neat things for anglers that really want to just spend a huge long day on the water is we already talked about kind of the do-it-yourself. Hey, fish as long as you want, wherever you want. But it also doesn't really get dark during your 8-week season. And certainly the first half of that, I mean, it's midnight sun. So you can fish until you literally drop.
Yeah, I sometimes talk to guests, you know, before they book, and they're like, oh, how much can we fish? And 6 days enough? And I'm like, man, you can fish your heart out, you know. in July, you can fish 24 hours a day. In August, maybe 21. But you'll get it done, you know. Oh, really? So, yeah, there's plenty of fishing time. Interestingly enough, you know, during the night, I mean, some people have fished into it. Fishing kind of slows off from around midnight until 3, maybe until 5 now in August. So the fishing will slow down, which is good. So even if you're, you know, crazy fanatic, you can get some sleep. But you can really fish as much as you want.
That's really neat. And one thing I think that's important to mention when we're talking about the fishing up here is the weather. And it is a rugged, extreme place. We've seen it all this week. We've seen some driving rain. We've seen some big winds. We had a windstorm one night at Camp North that, you know, felt like we were in a little hurricane there for a couple hours. And then the next morning we had sunshine. And yesterday we did a huge day here at Erfolak. It was one of the most beautiful bluebird days I think I've ever fished. But the weather can and does change really quickly up here, which means when you come, you need to be prepared for severe changes in temperature, wind, certainly precipitation, you know, driving rain. It can change hourly up here. And so you got to come ready.
You do. And every day you just have to remember, even if it looks, you know, super bad or super good or whatever, you have to be, it can change in a few hours. So you start in the morning and it's blue skies and this is perfect. I don't need the rain jacket today. You need everything. Just bring it. Because suddenly the wind changed, you know, it'll come in cold weather from the fjord or whatever. And 3 hours later, it's a pretty cold wind and, you know, you have to put on everything. Also with the layers, I mean, it's really important that you can take them on and off, because when you're hiking, you heat up. But once you stop to fish, yeah, it gets a little colder, so put them on. So, but yeah, the weather changes all the time. We don't get a weather forecast here. There's no point.
I mean, you're here.
Does
it matter?
Yeah, and it changes all the time anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the actual travel logistics of getting to Greenland. What's involved, say, if you're coming from the U.S. to fish for a week? Talk to us about that journey.
Yeah, it's a pretty long one, because you do need to fly to Copenhagen. You can fly from Iceland to Greenland, but it never fits with the domestic flights. And, you know, people have looked into it. So far, I've never had a guest that did it.
Yeah. And the delays from Iceland to Greenland are kind of legendary. So it can be a problem.
I guess, yeah.
So Copenhagen from the U.S., that's step one.
At least for now. You know, there are talks that it might change in the future. And also they're going to change the international airport from Kangerlussuaq to Nuuk. That might change things a little, but we don't know. So for now, into Copenhagen for the first night, because it's a morning flight to Denmark the next, from Denmark to Greenland the next day. And then it's a 4-hour, 15-minute flight. Then we have the domestic flight, half an hour or so, and we're in Sisimiut. There we have the first night at the hotel. In theory, we could take people directly to camp, but again, this is the Arctic. I mean, there are delays, there can be fog, there can be wind, you know. And then you just start losing fishing time. So we have that first buffer day with a night in Sisimiut. And yeah, beautiful town to
It's an amazing town. Yeah, we spent the day walking around. It is something right out of a postcard. And about 6,000 people in Sisimiut.
Yeah.
And again, second largest city in Greenland with 6,000 people.
Yeah, it's really big.
Yeah, but it's beautiful and super comfortable. The hotel Sisimiut is amazing. You get there, you stay your first night, you have a great meal there at the restaurant, and you ensure that all your gear is with you too, because you got to have your gear when you get here.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next morning from Sisimiut, you travel by boat either to Camp North, the camp down south, or here to Erfolic Lodge, and that's maybe a couple hours.
Yeah, it's if there isn't a strong current against us or whatever, it's about an hour and a half. Usually the next morning, but especially at Camp North, it's there are big tides there, and it's a shallow fjord at the end, right? So at the entrance of the river, so we need to match the high tide there. So it can on occasion be in the afternoon or whatever, but for Erfolic, usually 10 in the morning or 11 or whatever, and we do these groups back to back, so one group is going out when the next one is coming in, and then after the 6 days of fishing here, we go back and have another night at Hotel Sisimiut, because we're flying out the next morning back to Copenhagen. And there's a 4-hour time difference between Copenhagen and Greenland. So we're usually back in Copenhagen 8 or 9 in the evening, right? And then you have to do another night because you'll be flying back to the States the next morning.
Yeah. I mean, all told, it's, 10, 11 day trip for a week of fishing, but very worth it. And it's, as we often talk about with these destinations, there's some distance involved, but it's not hard. It's just a number of planes and transfers.
It's pretty easy travel, right? Because it's not long flights, and it takes a while to get back and forth, but it's not that hard.
And when you have these overnights in Copenhagen and Sisimiut, I mean, they're really neat places to explore and visit as well. So not a bad place to be overnighting, coming and going.
Yeah, we see quite a few of the guests we have from far away, like the US or even further away. I mean, they then decide maybe to spend a couple of days in Copenhagen. Copenhagen is at its nicest in summer, so perfect time to see the city. It's a small city, lots of history. You can walk everywhere, a great restaurant scene and so on. So some do that now that they're here, right?
Absolutely. And speaking of clients making the trip, where do most of your clients currently come from?
Currently, it's a big, great mix, which is great. We started out with the Scandinavians because that's where I had, the magazine, so that's where I could recruit from. And also in Scandinavia, there's quite a tradition of fishing char in Norway and Sweden, but they don't get very big. So especially the Swedes and the Norwegians was like, you catch the fish off your home country, but way bigger. So they were all in on it. So we started with Scandinavians. Then eventually we got a better grip on the European market, so more and more Europeans coming, and the odd American thrown in here and there. And now quite a few Americans have found us as well. So and we've even had guests from New Zealand, Uruguay. I have a guest or a group from next year from Australia and the Philippines. So,
that's a journey.
It is, right. Yeah. But yeah, but really it's a big mix, and I love it when we have these mixed groups. It's a lot of fun. I think you had one at Camp North, maybe.
Camp North, it was like the UN of fly fishing. I mean, we had France, Germany, Spain, Czech Republic, US, and a couple Danes as well. So, I mean, it was these great dinners and great conversation, really a good mix of people and anglers who were, that was the common bond, right? I mean, everybody had made the trip to because they love fishing. They love being in these rugged, amazing places, and it was a great time.
Yeah, and one thing I really like when we have these, I mean, we also have groups where 6, 7, 8 friends book together, obviously, they fill most of the group, but when we have these mixed groups, I love the fact that we don't have Wi-Fi out here.
Yeah.
It's getting harder
to find, by the way.
Yeah, and it would be possible to get it. I mean, you could get it. And I remember Bo telling me one year, we might have Wi-Fi next year. And I was like, that's all good, Bo, but when we're in the fishing season, just shut it off.
Yeah.
Because people talk together. You know, they get to know each other, right? Yeah. They sit here in the lounge area and they get to know each other.
Yeah, you get Starlink and everyone's sitting there in silence staring exactly. at a screen.
I see it when we came back to Sisimiut on the last night at the restaurant.
Yeah.
Sure, I mean, now they know each other and they're having a good time, but they need to see what's happening in the world. So everybody just sits there with their phone, right? I'm not having any of this. This is a Wi-Fi free spot.
Yeah,
let's keep it like that.
Yeah, and it's getting harder to find lodges that are like that, which is, I think, a big attractor for a lot of people. There's no doubt. Well, let's get back to some techniques on char fishing. A big part of the game up here, as we talked about, is skating foam flies on the surface, or oftentimes you're swinging flies kind of across the current and down into the current. So skating and swinging, a big part of it. Talk to us a little bit about some of the techniques. It's not hard for either of those, whether you're skating or swinging. But you know, this is kind of what the fish are going after and eating, because there really aren't any hatches here in Greenland. You're not imitating natural insects. And in fact, when these fish are in the river, they might not really be eating that much anyway.
Yeah, we don't know much about it. I don't think they are. But the funny thing is, I mean, nymphs can also be really effective, even on big fish. So they must have been eating something at some point, right? At least when they were here as a smaller char. So it's not all out of aggression. But they don't seem to eat much in the river. When they're on, they're super aggressive, especially on the foam flies and streamers. If you can put it just in front of them, I mean, it's not hard, but there's still some technique to it. So if you know exactly how to do it, sure, you'll catch way more. But we can show you that. You know, you're mending, or you're getting that nice swing, or even with the foam fly, or the skaters there. It's, you know, most people think they should pop him like you would for bass or whatever, like duck, duck, duck. But really the best technique is if you can just bring it in at an even wake, like you would be hitching for Atlantic salmon, create that wake. Mm-hmm. They go crazy for that. I don't know why, but that's when you just see him coming from far away and following it. So there is some technique to it. But overall, I mean, it's not too complicated. But sure, the better you are at it, the more you will catch. And we also occasionally side fish for a specific big fish, and that can be really hard. I mean, there's a lot of fish in the river, but they're not all biting, right? Can be super hard. So that might be with a heavier streamer or a nymph or whatever, but you can try different stuff and suddenly you might get it. But a lot of them, if they're not on, they're not on. You can see them out there, you can't catch them, suddenly they're on, boom.
Well, so with gear, let's talk for a minute about flies. You want to come with a good selection of foam skating patterns. You want to have streamers, and typically in bright colors, a lot of pinks and oranges and some whites, things like that.
Yeah, so our go-to colors, unless we're nymphing, has always been orange, pink, red, purple, maybe because that's kind of the color that the chars will eventually color up to themselves. So I'm like, okay, is this some kind of aggression thing, right? That's what their competitors in the river will look like. I don't know, but those are the good colors if you're fishing to get an aggressive take. But also in recent years, especially with the streamers, it's actually been going on for a while. I found that really lightly dressed small streamers can be super effective as well. In the beginning, we thought we couldn't get it big and bright enough, like steelhead flies or for Pacific salmon or whatever. But it's not at all like that anymore. Sometimes it works, but very often smaller flies can be good as well, smaller streamers. And I think it's maybe because, you know, they kind of see them last minute. They don't have time to think. Like a little with, you know, an Atlantic salmon presentation, you don't want to show the salmon your fly coming from, you know, 10 feet away, just getting closer and closer and closer. It's already figured out, oh, what's that thing coming here, right? But those smaller, lightly dressed streamers can be so effective as well. So, but I mean, because we've kind of found the best patterns over the years, we now have a fly selection. So if people don't want to bother with it, yeah, they can just pre-order and we'll deliver it at camp.
It'll be waiting at camp.
Yeah, and especially the gurklers there, the foam flies, they have difficulty sourcing them at home. So we have them as well. You know, just pre-order and we can have it ready for you.
And you got to have the right hooks. That's really important because these are strong fish. And if you have kind of some of the standard lighter gauge trout hooks, they can open up pretty easily.
Oh, I think they would, yeah. Also because we like to fish fairly heavy tippet. There's no reason for a super thin leader here. They're not leader shy.
Yeah.
And I prefer that you can fight him hard to get him in, you know, quite fast and get him out again. We only fish barbless hooks, but strong hooks, pull hard on him. Don't be afraid. I mean, if you lose him, there'll be another.
Yeah, that's true. There will always be another.
There will be. So we fish pretty heavy leader, 1X, 0X sometimes. Even on the foam flies, it doesn't matter at all, right?
Yeah, we were fishing 16-pound pretty much all week.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, exclusively.
Yeah. And only if you're nymphing, it might be, you know, good to have slightly thinner to get it down, but
they're not leader shy.
No.
At all.
No.
The name of the game up here is kind of a six-weight rod. We were fishing 9-foot six-weights all week, pretty much with floating lines.
Yeah.
Like a poly leader, a short kind of sinking tip section, very short, can be effective in some of the deeper buckets and deeper pools. But for the most part, it's a floating line situation up here.
Yeah, I never really fish anything but a floating line. I do bring a short sinking leader if I want to fish the lakes, you know, just to catch some to catch some chars for the table. We usually stop at the lake and catch a bunch. Yeah, sinking leader can be good for that. But no, a floating line, a six weight, and since you're probably bringing two rods, so you have a backup, if you can choose, if you have it at home, I would prefer kind of a saltwater six weight. If it's windy, you can even overline it with a seven weight, super easy to cast. And then a more freshwater mud, you know, a little softer, for a little more delicate presentation or whatever. So I have two six weights, but they're kind of freshwater and saltwater ones, right? But just with floating lines and tapered 9-foot leader, and I add, you know, 3 feet of tippet. That's it.
Any opportunities for spey fishing, two-handed rods, baby spey rods up here? What are your thoughts on that?
So we have guests that do it, especially on Camp North early in the season. They like to swing flies with trout spey rods or, you know, 4 or 5 weight or whatever. And I love casting the double hander. So I've often been tempted to do it. It's super cool. But I also find that, you know, during the day, you're fishing so much different water that while the lighter spey rod can be very cool on some of the beats on the river, it's useless on others. If you suddenly decide, not much happening here, let's hike up the tributary or whatever.
Yeah, and fish some of those pockets.
You're fishing
some
pocket
of the skinny water
with an 11-foot spey rod? Nah. But you can also just bring it for fun and, you know, just fish the parts that are working and leave the rod there. Bring two rods up from camp, leave it there. Nobody's going to take it, right? So yeah, we have some that do it. And I think actually on the fourth camp that we'll be opening, from what I know now, it might also be suited to it. It's a little bit different river, a little wider. So you can do it for sure. Nice. Don't bring it as your only rod, but bring it if you think it could be fun.
Main rod should be a single-handed six weight.
Yeah, yeah, much more versatile.
Well, what about other key pieces of equipment, Thomas? Things that anglers absolutely have to have. We talked about the rods and reels. We talked about the flies. Obviously, you said earlier, because we're doing so much hiking, great breathable waders, very comfortable with good rubber-soled wading boots, not felt.
Don't bring felt because the trails we're walking on, if we have rain, they kind of get a little muddy and you'll go more sideways with felt. I mean, they're no good. So it has to be rubber soles. And then there's not a lot to it. I mean, good waterproof backpack, like, you know, one of the Patagonia Simspacks or whatever for your stuff, because easier if we get some rain.
You're taking it with you every day. You're packing your lunch, extra layers, flies, your camera. Really good waterproof backpack is essential.
Yeah, usually we don't get, you know, a real downpour. This year was different. We had a lot of rain early in the season, which we usually don't have. It's not kind of a wet destination, but you never know, right? So bring the waterproof back.
And good rain gear. That's super important.
Yeah, I bring two rain jackets because whenever it's a nice day and it is, I mean, could be windy, but usually there's not a lot of rain coming. So most of the time, I'll just bring a lighter rain jacket, much easier to stuff in the back. If I can see it could be a rough day. Yeah, I have like a proper, you know,
heavy duty
rain jacket. Yeah. But I think I fished it 17 days this year, whatever. I wore it once. Usually I don't, you know, need it. So, but yeah, it's a matter of taste. But yeah, definitely a rain jacket and definitely a head net for the mosquitoes. Or not so much the mosquitoes. We have the small flies. So if the wind is down, yeah, they can kind of make you crazy. Just have the head net close to you at all times. a lot of the time you can get away also just with a buff, you know, pull it over your ears and nose if they're around. And as soon as the wind comes up, they're gone. But yeah, if the wind drops, they're there. So that's pretty essential.
I expected the bugs to be pretty substantial up here. And granted, we're here the last week of the season. Things have been cool. We've had some wind, but we've had beautiful days. The bugs have not been an issue at all for us during our week.
Yeah,
but I'm sure there are times of the year when they are.
There are, and it could be... It could be early in the season if we have an early spring, but there could also be none early in the season because it's still, you know, a little cold. They haven't really started yet. But from there on, it could be any time. And even during the week, yeah, there can be a bad bug day and there can be 2 days where you don't see any. Depends on the wind and the weather, right? So just be prepared for it.
Yep.
I was a little worried the first time I went up because I get so many mosquito bites at home, you know, they just love me. It wasn't that bad. And the mosquitoes there are some around for sure. But they don't seem to itch so much, you know, they're pretty small. So, yeah, it's a bug destination, but not all the time. And, I mean, I've had far more trouble with them on the Kola Peninsula or in Sweden, or I think it can be pretty bad in Alaska too. So be prepared for that, but it's not a super big deal most of the time.
Well, whatever you did this week with delivering the no bug thing, that was very nice of you. We appreciate that. We didn't see any.
No, but that was kind of special service for you guys, right? but other than that, I mean, yeah, the several different layers.
Layering's huge. It's important because you already alluded to it earlier, but the amount of hiking and walking that you're doing, you need to be able to constantly be changing, adding, taking off layers throughout the course of a day. And if you do that, you're comfortable all day long.
Yeah, and I found because, I mean, I like to hike quite a bit, but as long as you can adjust the temperature on your upper body, that'll be fine. So I actually just wear a couple of wool on this, you know, the long johns or whatever. But wool is really good.
Yeah, merino wool is amazing.
Exactly, because the other stuff, you know, lycra, whatever. No, not that's but the stuff you usually wear, you sweat a little bit, and it gets sour. You know, it's pretty bad after a day or two. So the wool is great.
Yep.
But then just plenty of layers for the upper body is easy to adjust.
Yeah.
Like the puffs and all this stuff is great.
I would say a key piece of equipment up here is your sunglasses.
Obviously,
as with all fly fishing. But here I found that I had two pairs with me every day. I had, you know, normal copper lenses for when it was bright and nice outside, but I carried a pair of low light glasses.
They're great.
I used the Costa SunCloud Silver Mirror Glass, but I used those more on this trip than I probably have on any others, and I was constantly switching throughout the day. The ability to spot fish and see exactly what you're going after is huge on these rivers.
That's a huge thing, and definitely bring the low light glasses, because when we have, you know, the cloudy days, the overcast weather, that's actually the best fishing. So for sure. Bring those. And also, I mean, even if it's not, you know, a hot destination, bring sunblock, and especially, you know, your lip balm. I mean,
yeah, some bug repellent.
Yeah.
I found
it's pretty bad up here, even if the sun is not too bad. But yeah, I think, you know, you can get scalded.
I mean, we're up here in the Arctic.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So
it's easy to get burned. I found in the camps where you're, you know, in your own tent each night, like a little inflatable solar lantern was nice to bring, a headlamp, of course. Just your typical camping stuff. But all in all, we were able to travel pretty light. And, you know, the big thing is just lots of layers, lots of changes of clothing. You kind of dress like you would if you were going to Alaska, for example, where you know it could be very cold or it could be super warm and sunny and you might be fishing in a T-shirt. But, you know, expect everything, I
guess. Yeah, and over the years, I mean, I've learned what is more clothing is more important than others. You know, you don't get to bring that much luggage on the flight. So, for example, a fresh, nice pair of socks every day after waiting. But I don't necessarily need, you know, a new T-shirt every day. If I'm at Camp North, I'm only showering, you know, three times during the week or whatever. But new socks, fresh underwear, mm-hmm. Even if you don't do the shower just before you get in your sleeping bag, that's super nice. So you kind of bring everything but the right stuff, and you'll be easily covered.
Absolutely. Well, what kind of angler, and I kind of want to close out on this, tell us what kind of angler should consider a trip here to Greenland. Who's a good fit for fishing, whether it's here at Orfalik Lodge or some of the more basic camp locations? Tell us about the right fit.
Well, we get, you know, very many different types of anglers. I think, you know, as long you're talking about the right fit, I mean, you've got to be a little fit, you know, that's the right fit. So other than that, I think everybody likes it here, right? I mean, if sure, it's not trophy hunting. You're not going for the 25-pound world record char, but if you just like good varied fishing, I don't know who wouldn't like it. Sure, you need to, you know, appreciate being in the outdoors and weather can change. And if you're just a super comfortable person that wants everything to run super smoothly, this might not be for you. Also, the whole travel thing. I mean, there can be delays. There can be fuck. You know, they can't land in Sisimiut or whatever. So, yeah, you're traveling in the Arctic. You know, that all comes along with it. But if you're open to that, really, who wouldn't like it here? I don't.
That's another good thing to add to the list is bring some patience.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is a wild, rugged, remote area. Delays can happen, no doubt about it, but just show up with the right attitude. And I really found that, you know, whether you're new to fly fishing and maybe you haven't done a whole lot of river fishing, or you're someone that has, you know, traveled the world, fished all different species, you know, high level angler, there's going to be something for everybody here. It's a really, it's a fishing scenario that I think kind of rewards all types of anglers.
I think so. Yeah. So it's not really limited as long as you're, you know, ready to hike to the fish. It's not limited to one type or the other. And we have groups, you know, where there's different kinds of the spectra, right? They're all here, but they all have a good time. And some decide to catch the fish in a more technical way or go for the big ones and others just want to catch some fish. Yeah, just last week I had some guys here that said, sure, you know, we could have caught more fish, but we want to catch in the cool way. It's not about catching as many as possible. It's just having a great day and catching them as you want to catch them.
Yeah, because I will tell you, from what I've seen up here, if you go out there and catch as many as possible, you're going to – it's a little overwhelming with the numbers you can find here at times.
It can be, yeah. And there can be slower days as well. But if you just want to catch – you know, you will probably ask me – what should an angler expect to catch in a week? Because that's the question you always get, right? Which we're not always super happy to answer because it's so hard to answer it.
It's our least favorite question,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it is a good one. And of course it depends. And we've talked a lot about the different factors, the weather, the skill level and all that, but that's a good one to try to answer.
Yeah. And if it's just about catching, you know, fish up here on a daily level, sure, I would take a bet that I could average 30 fish a day during the week. No problem. I could take that bet. But would I want to catch 30? I mean, if they're on foam flies, I fish nothing else. I might catch 7 or 12. And there are days where you catch, you don't even count them, right? And if we finish the day in the lake up here and we got to catch a few fish for the table, you know, the camp manager has told me bring back 4 or 5 fish. There's a lot of small fish in the lake as well hanging around there. So you might fish yourself through 20 or 25 fish just to get the 4 you need. Okay, that's a lot of fish as well. You've already been in the river. It's not about the numbers. You can catch plenty. It's about how you catch them. But you will catch fish, and you will catch fish every day. Anything else would be very, very unusual.
Well, Thomas, any closing thoughts or messages to our listeners before we sign off and say goodbye from Greenland here?
I think we covered it all pretty well. If you're happy, I'm happy. And that was it.
Well, I tell you, I'm incredibly happy with these last 10 days. It has been amazing. I am looking forward to working together. Yellow Dog will be booking your operations here in Greenland. People can certainly contact us for more details or to look at dates for the future. We're super excited to be adding these programs to the lineup, and we're really looking forward to working with you in the years to come.
Likewise. So thanks so much for coming. It was really appreciated.
Well, it's been great being here, and we appreciate your hospitality. And that is it for this latest episode of Waypoints, the podcast that is 100% dedicated to travel, destination angling, and the search for adventure. Be sure to visit yellowdogflyfishing.com to plan and research travel, source gear, equipment, and flies for your next destination, and to stay up to date on the latest angling news and developments. Join us for our next episode, and remember, life is short, and no one ever regretted a life of adventure.
This has been another episode of Waypoints, the podcast of fly fishing travel and adventure angling. Waypoints is produced by Brian Gregson, with music provided by the Steep Canyon Rangers. Visit yellowdogflyfishing.com for more destination profiles, travel news, and expert advice, and be sure to join us for our next episode.